Blog Talk Radio.
Things are going to get easier and brighter. 2012. Oh, we got a long wait coming up. It's me, your host, C. Robert Jones, with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Show. Today's date is, if you didn't know, February 21, 2011. Washington, D.C., planet Earth, third planet from the sun. And, wow. You know what? I want to start off with just a little bit of history here. It's very important that I get this out. Yep. Okay. Because there seems to be a little bit of hypocrisy going on. Oddly enough. Yep. A little bit of hypocrisy going on with the Obama White House, of course, as usual. Well, the president has went on his he had his radio address over the weekend, and you know, it was all about us having to not go on vacation. You know, because of the hard times that we're suffering. So he thought that his idea was that we shouldn't go on vacation, that we shouldn't spend our money on vacations and all of that, and that perhaps we should save our money. Well, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, I dig it. I dig it a lot. I think it's a good idea that, you know, a lot of us who are not doing well financially should probably not take vacations. But here's the problem. Sasha and Malia and Michelle are on vacation. And they're having a great time. And, wow, they're having short ribs, braised in coffee achoa chili sauce. Sounds tasty, doesn't it? They're really enjoying that. They're having braised achoa chili sauce on their ribs. My mouth is watering right now. They're having ribs. I'm hungry. Total calories per serving of this fine meal is 1,575. Fat, you ask? How much fat? 14 grams. That's all. So while they're having a great time, you know, the president is saying that we should that perhaps we shouldn't have vacations. We shouldn't take our vacations because it's just too expensive. Which brings me to the history lesson of the day. Did the French Queen Marie Antoinette ever actually utter the phrase, "Let them eat cake"? I had a friend who claimed that Maria actually said something in French that in phonetic spelling merely sounded like, "Let them eat cake." In the line in is the line in a class with Humphrey Bogart's "Play It Again, Sam"? Well, Bogey never said that. He actually said, "Play it, Sam. Play it. If she can stand it, so can I." That's what he said, but he didn't say, "Play it again, Sam." So I'm going to go ahead and educate the folks. Well, you know, I have often had a dream that someday one of these alleged facts of history is actually going to pan out. However, today is not that day. Emperor Obama can do what he wants, but the little people must sacrifice, GGT 183 in the chat room said. And I mean, apparently that's exactly how he feels. Because they're having a wonderful time in Aspen. Now, it's costing the taxpayers an arm and a leg. Now, the First Family is paying for some of their cost associated with the stay, but not very much. I mean, most of it's taxpayer money. The cost of Air Force One, for example, and then the cost of the security detail and all the logistics that go along with that, just so the First Family can go on vacation. These folks have been on more vacations in the 2 years that they've been in office than I have in the 49 years I've been on this planet and the 30 years I've actually worked. Now, remind you, I served in the military for nearly 30 years, and so we have 30 days vacation that come to us every year, and I didn't take that much vacation, and I had a very stressful job. Probably not as stressful as the president, but it seems the First Family's taking as many vacations as the president himself. What's up with all the vacations? I mean, they are living it up on taxpayer dollars. So back to the education. While Marie Antoinette was certainly enough of a dumbass to have said the phrase, "Let them eat cake," there's no evidence that she actually said so. And in any case, she did not originate the saying. The peasants have no bread story was in common currency, at least since the 1760s, as an illustration of the decadence of the aristocracy. The political philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau mentions it in his Confessions in connection with an incident that occurred in 1740. He stole wine while working as a tutor in Lyons and then had problems trying to scrounge up something to eat along with it. He concluded thusly, "Finally," and I quote, "finally I remembered the way out suggested by a great princess when told that the peasants had no bread. Well, let them eat cake." She never said that, but it sounds to me a great deal like that's what President Obama's wife is saying to the American people. Let them eat cake. It sounds an awful lot like to me like she's saying that we should eat bread while they have a good time and party like it's 1999. What a mess. These folks are a terrible, awful mess.
I got to tell you something right now. This president's presidency has been a complete and utter disaster. If this guy gets reelected, I'm not going to say I'm moving out of town, but I'm not going to say that. But I say if this guy gets reelected, it will be a miracle. It will be the highlight of Americans, the low light of Americans, America's downfall. This is a mess. So while Obama's family is pictured skiing, just days after telling Americans to sacrifice their own holidays, does this guy have any shame? Now, President Obama has been accused of having double standards after appealing for Americans to sacrifice their holidays all the time. But First Lady Michelle Obama and daughters Malia and Sasha are on a private family trip in Colorado. I guess it's for the President's Day weekend. Mrs. Obama and Sasha, 9, were pictured waiting in line at the Eagle Bond gondola to the top of the mountain today. Wow, they're having a great time. While there is 10% unemployment, and some say it's even higher based on the number of people who stop looking for work. So while there are unemployed people everywhere here in the United States of America, we have the Obamas skiing and having a great time. The First Lady's cream ski jacket was open, perhaps indicating that temperatures are not as bitter as they are in other parts of the country. So they're really having a great time. She looks fabulous. Both wore gloves and hats. They're not carrying skis. They flew over in Air Force 2. Mm-hmm. The family's staying in an upscale Sebastian Hotel on Vail Mountain, where the rooms start at $650 a night and range up to more than $2,400 for multi-bedroom suites. Uh-huh. The trip came just days after the president tried to sell his cost-cutting budget to the American people by asking them to stay home. God, this guy's got balls as big as church bell. He said, and I quote, "If you're a family trying to cut back, you might skip going out to dinner, or you might put off a vacation," he said. So if you're a family trying to cut back, you might skip going out to dinner, or you might put off a vacation. Oh, that's sweet. But the First Lady was seen having fine ribs and fine chili sauce and fine brownies and fine finery. But at least Obama's staying put in the White House. The rest of his family is in Colorado. But, you know, they're in Colorado, aspirin country. Rather than visiting the slopes closer to Washington in Virginia or Pennsylvania, where they have some fine slopes over there, And their trip came despite previous criticisms over the family's extravagant vacations, including a trip last summer to Spain, mostly at government expense. Are you kidding me? These people know no shame. Just like, I mean, it's a Democrat thing. Just like Nancy Pelosi had no problem using an Air Force jet to fly her back and forth home, used it as an excuse. There was terrorist activity. There was she was the speaker, third in line for the presidency, so she had to have this fine G5 flown by the military to ferry her around. Mrs. Obama has also raised eyebrows when she left earlier than her husband for their annual Christmas holiday in Hawaii, incurring additional expenses estimated to be more than $97,000. That's taxpayer expense. Indeed, health kick. No, she can eat the brownies She can eat the brownies and the ribs and the fine rib sauce and all those goodies, chowing down. It's us, the little people, that, well, we need to eat salad. We need to eat healthier. These folks have absolutely no credibility. Obama has none, mind you, and now his wife has even less. How can anyone at this point take her seriously when she talks about this let's move? Her ass is moving, all right, to the dinner table. And quite frankly, I don't mean to be cheap about this, but is she not, has she not gotten just a little chunkier since she's been the first lady? All those salads must really be putting on the pounds. I mean, it's a cheap shot, really. It is. I can't help myself, though. She is really gaining weight since becoming First Lady 2 years ago. And I don't want to even start talking about the little girls, because that would be inappropriate. But the First Lady is completely fair game. Now, in August, it cost taxpayers an alleged $375,000 for her security detail and two flights on Air Force One on a holiday to Spain with her daughter, Sasha, and, of course, 40 friends. Although the Obamas will pay for a portion of the skiing trip, taxpayers, well, they're still going to shoulder many of the costs. We're going to shoulder many of the costs for this vacation that Obama says that we perhaps shouldn't take because we can't afford it. Now, there's a motorcade involved of about a dozen vehicles, including at least 15 police officers from the local police department, probably incurring quite a bit of overtime, traveling from, I guess it's Eagle County Regional Airport, to Vail, Colorado. Now, the roads were closed temporarily to make way for the motorcade, and my man Rush Limbaugh said, "I don't know whether to laugh or cry." He's got the single largest deficit in the history of the country, and he's trying to tell us that we really should cut back. And I quote, meanwhile, Vice President Joe Biden and his wife are spending the holiday weekend in the U.S. In Florida's Key Largo resort town. And the White House said that the Bidens arrived in Key Largo on Thursday night and will remain there until Monday night. That's not a bad vacation. And I have not heard that gaffe-prone idiot Joe Biden, you know, I haven't heard of him doing anything really extravagant, perhaps because he doesn't have, you know, maybe he doesn't have all the goodies that the president has. The First Lady and several close family friends are chaperoning their children on the ski trip. I wonder who's paying for the First Lady's close friends on this trip. And did they ride on Air Force One, and did they drive up in their cars, or did they take like a commercial flight sitting in the middle seat? I wonder. Yeah, it was funny earlier, but it's not anymore. How we allow these folks to have actual, I don't even know. I can't. It's funny, but it's not even funny. But here's something that's very serious. Let's get to some serious matters right now. It appears that the Obama administration, it just appears that the Obama administration is colluding with Google, Facebook, and Twitter. And some say it's to create unrest, all the unrest that we're seeing throughout the world right now. Based upon the Obama administration's response to events in Egypt, it appears as if they were caught by surprise, doesn't it? Because at first, you had Joe Biden coming out to declare that Mubarak was not a dictator. And then and soon afterwards, President Obama sides with the protesters. Mubarak made the bold move to shut down the internet and cell phone service, which was helping the protesters to organize the cell phones and the internet. And then a company such as Google, YouTube, which is also Google, Facebook and Twitter, well, they played a major role in the protest, which led to Mubarak's fall from power. So while the Obama administration appeared to be caught by surprise with respect to Egypt, well, could they now be colluding with companies such as Google, Twitter, and Facebook to initiate the unrest we are seeing throughout the rest of the world? It's a fair question, I think. Hey, Tesla. Libya is now on the verge of civil war, and countries including Iran, Yemen, Algeria, and Morocco are seeing increasing amounts of unrest. And most surprisingly, the citizens of China, well, they've joined in too. So is all this unrest, for lack of a better word, good or bad for the United States? In the long term, it's true that more democracies and fewer dictatorships would be a positive for the United States. In the short term, however, the United States may be facing some serious pain in more ways than one. Well, higher gas prices, inflation, increased terrorism, and war are all possible scenarios or outcomes of the protests that are taking place right now. And that being said, the dictatorship in Egypt was defeated without one U.S. soldier being put in harm's way, which is a great thing. Could these other dictatorships be defeated without risking the lives? Well, without risking the lives of U.S. Servicemen and women? What will these regimes do when backed into a corner, though? Hosni Mubarak is 82 years old. I mean, he's pretty much done. He probably wasn't up for a fight. But will Libya's Gaddafi step down just as easily? And what about the Chinese leadership? Which brings us back to the Obama administration's relationship with high-tech companies. Google, Twitter, and Facebook, well, they hold tons of personal information about their users, and their users are worldwide. And so through technology, they can direct world events, one would surmise or deduce. Could they now be placing their power in the hands of the United States government? There is a conspiracy theory out there. I myself do not subscribe to conspiracy theories. But in this case, Google had to make some concessions to the Chinese government in order to provide their service in China. These concessions include censorship. And it's possible that the Chinese government foresaw the threat that companies such as Google and others could pose to their power, or that the U.S. government could use this technology as a weapon against them, as is alleged in Egypt, in the Egypt overthrow. Just last week, a meeting was held at the home of venture capitalist John Doerr. And the participants included Eric Schmidt, chairman and CEO of Google, Carol Bartz, chief executive Yahoo, Dick Costolo, chief executive of Twitter, and Mark Zuckerberg, chief executive of Facebook. While interesting, while it's interesting to note that Very little is known about what was discussed during the 90-minute dinner. What's even more interesting is that the final list of participants was put together at the last minute. It was very short notice. President Obama was in attendance. Did I mention that? Egypt fell, and a meeting was held. Now, dictatorships throughout the world are facing unprecedented opposition. Can we put two and two together? Okay. So, we have the potential here for a big mess. Moving on. Washington faces, in my opinion, the possibility of Armageddon. Unlike any since the Civil War. The U.S. debt crisis represents a unique and unparalleled, unimaginable convergence of circumstances. Yet, despite the utter gravity of our plight, nothing is being done to change our course. Washington must either muster the courage and the support of Americans to accept the pain and make the sacrifices of a lifetime or face the downfall of America. It's just as simple as that. Now, we have the greatest collection of politicians in one place at any one given time in Washington, D.C., than any other nation on the planet before or since. These are alleged to be smart people. They're supposed to have intellect. So then, what is the issue here? Are they just stupid? I mean, seriously, no. We're in serious debt. Republicans want to pull the car out of the ditch, if you will. The Democrats want the car to stay in the ditch while saying they want to help pull the car out of the ditch. I'm doing idiot Obama's car ditch analogy. It never gets old. Have we been sold out, or what is the end game here? I've asked this question so many times. All of these people cannot possibly be stupid. Do they want to see the downfall of the country? Because they seem to be so against spending. So against not spending our money. Money we don't have. Well, you can't cut this and you can't cut that. Do they know something that we don't know? I mean, honestly, do we have more money than we're saying? Are we saying we don't have any money, but we do? Or are we broke and they just don't care? I mean, I can't possibly imagine. The United States government and its agencies have, by far, number one, the largest pile of interest-bearing debt, and that's totaling $15.6 trillion, give or take a couple hundred million. Number two, the largest accumulation of unsecured obligations. That's over $60 trillion. Number three, the largest yearly deficit, $1.6 trillion. And number four, the greatest indebtedness to the rest of the world, which is $4.8 trillion. That's of any country in the world. In proportion to the size of its economy, one important country, Japan, does have more debt than the U.S. But unlike Washington's debt, nearly all of Japan's is financed by its own citizens, loyal, long-term savers who are far less likely to pull out in a storm. Despite the utter gravity of America's plight, nothing is being done to change our course. So, what are the consequences of all this? Because, you know, I have friends and associates who say to me, well, what's this got to do with me? You know, tell me, CJ, how does this affect me? Right here. So I say to them, well, first of all, high interest rates. Due to the avalanche of government borrowing to finance the deficit, there is no power on earth that can avert sharply higher interest rates. And that will affect the average American citizen. Higher bond yields. Well, all long-term bonds, whether issued by other government agencies, corporations, states, or municipalities, will also collapse, driving their yields through the roof. Because when Uncle Sam has to pay more to borrow, they inevitably have to pay more as well. You, the consumer, the person. Higher mortgage rates. That's a given. Rates on mortgages and car loans will surge. Why? For the simple reason that they're also tied at the hip of long-term treasury rates. So if you want to take out a 30-year fixed mortgage, now close to 5%, or a medium-priced home, $178,000, somewhere around there, and you can afford a 10% down payment, just 10%. A 1% rise in rates will drive your monthly payments from $861 to $962. That is $1,212 a year. So when you start talking in those terms, folks start to get the picture. What is going on in Washington? One would think that the President of the United States would be more concerned with, well, the solvency of the United States of America and less concerned with being reelected. President Kennedy, well, I will say he wrote the book Profiles in Courage, but he actually didn't. Somebody else wrote it. It was a ghostwriter, put his name on it. But it's a pretty good book. Profile in Courage, it speaks to great men in history who went against the conventional wisdom for maintaining power and simply did the right thing, to do for their prospective countries. No, I'm not talking about Obamacare and going against the polls and all that. They were going against polls. They were doing things that were unpopular. And consequences for maintaining power be damned. And the book by John F. Kennedy was titled Profiles in Courage. Well, where are our profiles in courage? Now, we have the Republicans in the House, John Boehner, and the whole gang. They're exercising profiles in courage, but what about the President of the United States? What about the Democrats? Where's the profile in courage, saying that, hey, this is what we have to do? Because as we know, the entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all of that, is really what's stringing out our deficit. The President didn't mention any of these things. And yet he speaks of investing more money. And I say, and I've said to this on other blog talk shows, if I don't have any money, Where do I get the money to invest? I have a blog talk radio show. I like the show. It's okay. You know, it's really. I mean, I have a passion for it. But what happens if some reason I couldn't afford it? Well, I wouldn't be able to do it if I couldn't afford to, you know, the yearly subscription, which I pay yearly. Well, I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd have to use that money for something else, like bills and stuff. Well, if the president of the United States wants to invest money we don't have, but he wants us to stay home and not take our vacations and not go on extravagant dinners and all that, why doesn't he practice what he preaches? Well, I can tell you why. Because the president of the United States has no interest whatsoever in saving this great country. Tesla says the president isn't interested in old-time Democrats like the great JFK. He's more interested in promoting the radicalism of the 60s and 70s as an anti-colonialist and believer in the Marxist-based philosophy known as Black Liberation Theology. Indeed, I couldn't agree more. But what happens when the country is insolvent? And thus the government is insolvent. Do you think that the president of the United States, that this administration has an end game? Or are they simply going through the motions? I cannot believe that President Obama is that smart. Or is he? Because it seems to me that the president of the United States is bankrupting this country. And he's doing so, it's in our face. I mean, because he can't possibly believe that we're just stupid, that we don't see what's going on. Or perhaps he thinks that we're just powerless to stop it, that there's nothing we can do to stop it, that he has engineered the winning of an election, he's now president, and he's going to do what he wants. And he's going to engineer another election and win re-election and then, you know, pretty much do what he wants. I find it difficult to believe that he will step down if he wins re-election in 2012, that he will step down at the end of his second term if he wins one. I don't think he will. I mean, hi, Mary. So, the president, we have to wonder what's going on with this guy. He was supposed to be so competent, brilliant. Brilliant man. But we're broke. Are we broke? Are we broke or are we not? I mean, or is this just another catchphrase? Because if we're truly broke, if we don't have the money, if we're spending more money than we take in as a country, as a nation, is Obama just gambling? Is he just gambling with America, just rolling the dice, saying that if we invest in high-speed rail, if we invest in education, if we invest in solar shingles and green energy, that America will somehow turn itself around? Or is he counting on bankrupting the country to establish a socialist rule? To rule the country. I mean, come on. I can't believe it. I can't believe that it's hard. It's hard for me to subscribe to some of these theories. But I'm starting to come around to them. I mean, I'm a big Glenn Beck fan. I love Glenn. I love listening to him. I love all. I mean, I provide a lot of the background for a lot of his shows. But it's hard, even though a lot of the stuff when he goes to the chalkboard and when he plays a video, a lot of that stuff's coming from me. He's got a chief researcher. I'm just one of them. But when he puts it all together, some of it sounds a little crazy, but it's all happening. You know, I've only been listening to Glenn Beck for the year, since last year. Well, since he started the show on Fox. I didn't listen to him on the radio. And when he started talking about gas prices going up, the year before they actually happened, when he started talking about food prices going higher, when he started talking about wars and rumors of wars happening, all the things that Glenn Beck talked about are happening. All the research that I did to help put together Glenn Beck's show is happening. Every little bit of it. Glenn Beck seems to be like the modern day Nostradamus. And folks are saying that he's a kook and that he has conspiracy theorist and all that stuff. And most of the stuff that he's talking about is actually coming to pass. And it's scary. It really is. Changing the topic. We got to. I'm starting to become very annoyed. Illinois, Wisconsin, the Democrat 14, that's what they're being called. And they shuttle from place to place in Illinois. They contact constituents, they read emails and try to keep up to date on the political chaos that has engulfed Madison, Wisconsin since they fled. That's what they did. They fled like criminals. And the 14 Democrat state senators say they stand united in trying to block passage of Governor Scott Walker's budget repair bill. So who's going to blink first? Is it going to be governor? I don't think so. He's come too far now. He has come too far to give in. And I would wager anything that there are governors, Republican governors, all across the country who are calling, writing, emailing, urging him to stand fast. Because at this point, if Governor Walker gives in, then it's a great victory for the unions all across America. They will only grow stronger. They will only cement themselves like the leeches they are into America even further. And then, well, we're done. We're done. Because the unions care about the unions. And as I stated in previous blog talk shows, it's not like back in the days when unions started out and they were fighting for a fair and decent wage, a clean, safe workplace, and that sort of stuff. You know, the basic, good old, wholesome American stuff. That's all they're asking for, a clean place to work, a safe place to work. A lunch break. You know, a decent wage. That's all. That's all. But now, no. It's all about getting as much as they can and do as little as they can get away with. Now, Senator Julie Lassa, Democrat from Stevens Point in Wisconsin, says the ball is in Governor Walker's court. Public employees, she said, have given him what he needs to balance the budget. All they want is a voice in their workplace and to keep their rights. But those rights are causing the great state of Wisconsin to go into bankruptcy. But they don't care. They couldn't care less. So they're hiding out, moving from place to place like felons, and they're just staying away. While school children are not being taught, teachers aren't working, frauds are being committed because doctors are out in the crowds writing notes, get out of work notes for people who aren't sick. And what you have is a huge, huge mess in Wisconsin. While the 14 hide out and move from place to place as if they're running from the law, shirking their responsibility. They're not even, I mean, it's their responsibility to go and vote. And that's what they were sent to do, to represent their constituents. How could they represent their constituents hiding out like thieves in the night, crooks, moving from place to place so they can't be found? It's silly. It's childish. And Democrats say they didn't start this fight. Governor Walker has pulled the nuclear option. I can't believe this. Is there not one sane, decent Democrat out of the 14 to actually go and do their job? All they need is one adult in that group to go and say, you know what, enough of this. This is silly. I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to put an end to this by voting. And then these folks won't have any excuse hanging out in the Capitol, sleeping out there, because quite frankly, if I were Governor Walker, it wouldn't bother me one bit. You could show up every single day if you wanted to. Sooner or later, you'd have to get tired and go home. And I'd play chicken. I'd play chicken in a heartbeat. We'd see just how who would hold out first. Now I understand that the governor has to deal with the other Republicans, and one or two of those folks might waver. But nevertheless, is there any greater reason as to why Gallup has found that fewer Americans identify themselves as Democrats than this? I mean, this is embarrassing. And these 14 have managed to embarrass the Democratic Party countrywide. Their behavior is childish. So ABC News' Amy Walters reported a Gallup analysis of interviews of more than 350,000 Americans in all 50 states and the District of Columbia finds that fewer people define themselves as Democrats in 2010 than did in 2008. In fact, Gallup even states that the District of Columbia had fewer residents identifying as Democrats or identifying as independents but leaning Democrat in 2010 than in 2008. Now, states carried by Barack Obama in 2008 including New Hampshire, Maine, Wisconsin, Colorado, Florida, Indiana, and Nevada, saw some of the most significant shifts away from Democratic identification. Is there any wonder why? These 14 Democrats, I mean, not too many folks are talking about it in the news, certainly not the mainstream media. But let's just talk about the sheer embarrassment they are calling, they're causing the Democratic Party, the Democrat Party, by behaving like children. Worse, behaving like criminals. They're behaving like criminals. They should be impeached. But what will happen, Mary, is that they will, I mean, who's going to reelect these folks? They're not doing their jobs. They're hiding out. And who's paying for these hotel stays? I wonder. Who's paying for the food and lodging? They crossed state lines into Illinois, and no less, they went to Rockford. Rockford is the worst town in America. But now I understand they're in Chicago now. And they're moving around every couple of days. Like thieves. Like murderers. Well, they're moving around like criminals. Hiding out. Now, in 2008, there were only seven states, Alabama, Kansas, Nebraska, Alaska, Ohio, Wyoming, and Utah, where the number of people who identify themselves as Republicans outnumbered those who identify themselves as Democrats. By the end of 2010, that had tripled to 22 states. Is there any wonder? Democrats behave like start extradition. They haven't done anything wrong. They're just behaving like criminals. Running and hiding like children. Oh, you're not going to vote the way we think you should vote. You have the majority. This is what the Democrats are saying. We don't have the majority. And we know that you're not going to vote the way we want you to vote, so we're leaving. We're leaving town. And we're not coming back until you change your mind about how you're going to vote. Isn't that silly? It's worse than criminal, Mary. It's silly. It's childish. What do you think would happen if the Supreme Court were about to reach a 5-4 decision, say, on Obamacare, and the four who didn't vote in favor of repealing Obamacare decided that if the five were going to vote to repeal it, well, the four were just not going to participate. They were going to leave. They're going to Aspen. I quit. I'm going to Aspen. I'll be back when you change your mind. If you change your mind. Of course, that would never happen because a 5-4 decision is a 5-4 decision. They don't even have to be there. Others don't have to be involved. But, I mean, it's just childish. They're holding a whole state hostage. It is dereliction of duty. But the only way they can be called on it is to be voted out when their term ends. Not only are they holding the state hostage, they're holding all the rest of the voting public, all the rest of the citizens. Well, everything's in limbo now. Teachers aren't teaching. Kids are out just kind of hanging out in the crowd. And worse, and more seriously, Governor Walker's house, his neighborhood has been besieged or seized upon by union members, union thugs. vowing to camp out at his house, on his lawn, throughout his neighborhood, because they want to let him know that they're there and that he's being watched. Those are quotes. I didn't put the quotes in front and back like I usually do, but those are quotes. So not only are they, these union folks, attempting to intimidate elected officials, which should in fact be a crime, they're camping out at the governor's house. This whole ugly situation, childish as the 14 are, has at some point, well, at some point can become dangerous. You know, every time I look at the news, Fox News, Fair and Balanced, and I watch the goings-on in Madison, I've been waiting for the violence to start. I've been waiting for a bottle to be thrown, a gun to be fired, somebody to get hit over the head with something. I am amazed that there hasn't been much violence so far. The only saving grace for this whole ugly ordeal. And we have the 14 camping out.
I'm Stephanie. Come join my team at Verizon Wireless.
Wow. It's amazing. Okay. All right. Isn't it any wonder why folks are identifying themselves less and less as Democrats? It's embarrassing. If the GOP were doing something like this, I'd be embarrassed to call myself a conservative, a Republican. Obama was supposed to settle all of this. He was supposed to bring us all together. Instead, Obama, the President of the United States, has become a disruptive force, not only here in the United States, but around the world. And like I said in previous blog talk shows, I don't hold much for this thing about him being the Antichrist, because I don't like to subscribe to those wacky, crazy, wild conspiracy theories. So I'll just say that Obama is bad news. You know? He's like the girlfriend, that first date, those first five or six dates, and like everything's wonderful and magical, and you're all in love, and it's all great, and you think you've found that special person. And then they turn out to be ass. It's like that. It's like that first year of marriage when it's all so wonderful. Or maybe the second year, and it's all so beautiful. And then the other shoe drops. And you find that this person is a lunatic. And you got to get the hell out of there. This is what's happening with President Obama. We're finding out that this guy is bad news. And he's got to go. Yeah, he's got to go. Well, thank you so much for listening, everybody. I really do appreciate it. Thanks, Tesla, Mary, GT1183, Forge 2, and everybody else who downloads the program. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Y'all have a good night. God bless you.